Oh, I did that purposely. Nothing I like better than knock us off the air once in a while. You know, it keeps them on the stick out there to transmit it. Gee, I have a very important little note here before we get started tonight. Of course, all of us are deeply involved in art, aren't we, friends? And two things. Have you ever been in the Smithsonian Institute? Boy, that is the most fantastic place in the world. It really is. Those airplanes, all that stuff hanging there. And did you see the little note that came out of UP the other day? The Smithsonian Institution has uncovered, literally, a picture of Joseph Heron, a 19th century public servant, who, according to the normally stuffy museum, worked, and we quote here, unencumbered by clothing. That means as naked as a jaybird. Why they had a picture of him in the Smithsonian, I don't know. He worked with the government from 1866 to 1883. Although living costs aren't what they are today, or weren't what they are today, Heron wasn't in the top pay category either. So he discovered a simple way to avoid the relatively high maintenance charges of stuffed, starched collars and other items of apparel. You know, if you have a starched collar, you know, it's a problem. And so he figured, you know, just don't wear anything. In a report to the staff, the Smithsonian said its former employee may also have been an early naturalist, but admitted, quote, the facts on Mr. Heron are bare. And he sent around, it says, and absolutely, I almost said it, he was naked as a jaybird, friends. And it says, in a report to the staff, the Smithsonian said that, you know, he completely didn't wear anything, and somebody took the trouble to record a picture of him for posterity, and we're posterity, you see. And now we know about Mr. Heron, very early lasher out there against Victorian mores. By the way, haven't you been pleased to see that there are so many movies now that are stripping aside the sham of idol and outdated Victorian mores? Aren't you pleased about that? Well, now, wait a minute. Now, I haven't found anybody with Victorian mores for a long time. Yeah, you know, that's the old paper tiger bit, you know. That's setting yourself up as a fighter against something that doesn't exist anymore. And I doubt whether Victorian mores have had much of an effect on the country for probably 40 years. But nevertheless, there's always a movie late at night. If you watch your TV late at night, maybe 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when they put the commercials on for all these films. Did you know that? Yeah. And I'll come a, you know, it's just usually a little slide. It says,
now, at last, stripping aside the sham of Victorian mores, the producers who brought you the orgy up in Lil's room now bring you another educational film called, oh boy, is this one groovy. Yes, you must see, oh boy, is this one groovy, rated triple X. Now, according to the New York Times, hoo-wee, see it at the...
These films are on every night. I love to watch these late TV commercials. You see some great stuff on. By the way, speaking of art, and we're all interested in art, right, gang? Speaking of art, I would like to salute a great artist. Before I do that, I would like to give you a little example of art. Please, that's the big one over there, Al, please.
Thank you.
That. Oh, that's a mean jew's harp. Sonata for jew's harp and 17,522-inch speakers. Beautiful, beautiful piece of work. We'd like to salute Gene Davidson tonight. You ever heard of Gene Davidson? Prize-winning artist. I'd like to salute him. We have a spy down in Florida. You know, we get heard down in Florida quite a bit. Yes, very much. And we would like to salute this artist, and you should know about him. He won a prize in an art competition. And according to one of our spy down in Florida, he sent us the clipping on him. And the clipping, by the way, is from the local news today, published in Brevard County, birthplace of the space age. And it's down in Florida, Melbourne, Florida. And here's what it says. Gene Davidson would like to forget about the prize he won in the Seaside Art Show. As a matter of fact, he'd like to forget about the whole darn Seaside Art Show. He won a prize. And Mayor Glenn Littlejohn says he certainly would like to forget about Davidson. Davidson says he is still rather curious as to why the show's two judges gave a yellow third-place ribbon to him for the rope barrier he had around a sculpture on display in the show. This is an insult to me. It's an insult to the town and this rotten art show, he fumed. Davidson was so upset, he admits that he cussed out the mayor's wife on the podium when she handed him his third place ribbon. I've never seen anything like this in all my born days. And obviously dismayed, Davidson sputtered as he surveyed his prize winner. You know what he won a prize on? It was three slender metal poles about 36 inches high. You know, the kind they used to make barriers around things? Each pole was an ordinary flat base. You know, had a base on it sitting up there. A yellow cord strung through loops in the top of each pole connected to three. He just put it around this. He worked in the museum, so he put this thing around there. Judges showed some interest when they were reached by telephone at the University of Georgia Art Museum. This is a big show, you see. At the University of Georgia Art Museum, where the director, Douglas Williams, one of the judges, explained his selection of the barrier. He said, you know, it caught my eye, and I asked Mr. Davidson if it was on display. Davidson just sort of gave me a funny look, so I figured it was. According to Williams, he figured that it was on display. The other judge was Dr. Ron Props of the Penland Craft School in North Carolina. Well, both of us felt that it was a very interesting piece of art. Highly unusual, Williams said. You know what I think they are? A couple of phony ding-a-lings, is all that Davidson said. And now he's got a prize, a third place room. You know, what do you do after you've been awarded it, you know? For the barrier. Such a barrier up there. Beautiful piece, see? And there's a picture of it. It's lovely. It's a, you know, typical barrier. It's a drawing of it. It's very nice. It's a, you know, it looks like the kind that says all full up. You know, they put a barrier up where it says, no more space, something like that. And there's a ribbon hanging on it, big yellow ribbon. Well, now, I don't know whether this says anything about art or not. That must have been a hell of a barrier, is all I got to say. But this kind of thing, that reminds me of a thing that happened to a friend of mine. Art is a strange thing. It really is. And who was it who said? Now, I wish I knew who said this. Because it's a great quote. It says a lot about that. He said, art is anything you can get away with. Who was that? You know, I think it might have been... No, I don't think it was Warhol. No, it might have been. I don't think so. But it might have been. But whoever it was who said it really laid it on the line. Art is anything you can get away with. And I'm going to tell you about a friend of mine who... that reminded me, you know, reading this story, I also know a prize-winning artist who, even to this day, is very, very... in fact, I suspect that he has never confessed it to anyone. But this is exactly what happened. I had a friend a long time ago when I was going to school, and I was working this radio station in the summertime. And you know what happens to guys in radio stations late at night? They get very restless. Especially if the station carries a lot of network stuff, you know, and there's a lot of stuff going on, you don't have much to do with it. And so guys tend to get very restless. And also, this friend was, he had a special show that he did every night. It was a symphony show. Did I tell you that story? I think so. Every night he would come on, and, you know, radio station can get quite boring. That reminds me, this is WOR in New York, and Al... Do you have the little button there? You can hit the forward button, please. If you will, it's marked forward. There you go.
Here's New York Met stars Ron Swoboda and
it's a train
pool for your local Ford dealer.
Take me out to that Ford.
I'm going to fill in with a boy.
That's where I want to be.
Take it, Ron.
He's giving big discounts on all his cars.
The biggest savings that there ever was.
Oh, it's save on a new Ford. 25,000 he's got.
Yeah.
So it's go. See your Ford man today. Get a deal that's hot.
Ron, I'll sing he's not great, but we're telling the truth.
You said it, Eddie, and right now your local Ford dealers teamed up with neighboring Ford dealers to form the world's biggest automobile discount center.
Over 25,000 Fords, must say. He's discounting like crazy.
And you know, Ed, with his new computerized car locator, he'll find the exact model you want as fast as it takes you to steal second.
Faster, I hope.
So buy now and save more at the world's biggest automobile discount center.
Yeah, it's go. See that Ford man today and you'll save.
yeah. You notice that only winning teams do commercials? You don't hear any commercials with, say, Bobby Mercer. Here's Bobby Mercer now for your local rub-dub-dub dealer. Yes, sirree. Oh, yeah. But anyway, this buddy of mine, excuse me, before we go any further, time is getting short now, friends. This Friday night, let's see, where's my little dinger on that? Yeah, this Friday night, I'm going to be at Newark State College, the Theater of the Performing Arts. And I'm looking forward to this. This is the last big show I'm going to do this, because I've made up a rule that this is it, you know, a little private rule. This is the last big live show. You know these live shows, I love to do them, but wow, are they tiring. And this is the last big one I'm doing this particular spring. In fact, the next one in this area will be late in the fall, right? Newark State College Theater of the Performing Arts, Union, New Jersey. And don't forget, it is not Newark that the Newark State College is in. I'm sure there's a lot of guys going to be wandering around Newark Friday night looking for it. It's in Union, New Jersey. Newark State College is in Union, New Jersey. We'll be there this Friday, the 8th of May, Friday at 8 o'clock. And you can get tickets at the door. That's Union, New Jersey, Newark State College, 8 o'clock this Friday. Right? Well, now I'm going to tell you something. I think I might have told this story because it was one of the great things that I've ever seen happen in a radio station. You know, that the electronics and the officialdom that surrounds art so often. And I say electronics because there's a lot that's done in the name of electronics today that's art. And I have a friend who was one of the first truly great electronic composers. But he will go down in history totally anonymous. Anonymously, he will disappear into the great mire of darkness of history, like many great men of his time. And here's how it happened. Late at night, this guy had this show. It was every night, actually, from midnight until 1 o'clock. In fact, it was from midnight, I believe, to 1:30. Had a fantastic rating in this great Midwestern city. It was a symphonic show. You know, there aren't many symphonic shows on anymore. Most radio stations tend to do the same thing all day and all night. There's hardly any variety in most radio stations. And so today they'll have a formula. Well, the formula may be rock, and that's it. They're playing on the rock. Or else they'll have nothing but talk all day long. Guys are on the phone. Yes, hello. Yes, this is Big Charlie. Of course. The Middle Eastern situation, that's simply evolved, of course. Send supplies to Nasser. Don't send any more bomb. Yes, next question. The Yankees, of course. The Yankees will end in third place this year because they have a very weak spot in the infield. Next question. Well, you know, this goes on all day long. And all night long, you'll find people are being interviewed. There's certain stations that definitely interview people all day and all night. Well, this is a formula. Well, this particular show was on before they had formulas. And people used to do all kinds of things. You turn in a radio station, you didn't know what you were going to hear. And it made radio listening a pretty exciting thing, really, you know. You'd listen from day to day, and every hour on the hour, there'd be another wild show on by somebody else. Well, he had a show late at night that was very serious, very serious. And it was a symphony show sponsored by this elegant department store. Would be like if we had a show here in New York that was sponsored by Bonwit Teller. And they were very straight-laced, and he played great symphonic music. But he was bored out of his skull. And every night he would come in, and he'd pace the floor and walk around, do a station break at 7. That's all he had to do until midnight when his show came on. Well, he had this little script that he would read every night. He would write it up himself, you know, comments on the music. And they were usually fairly brief, but often quite scholarly. For example, it would go like this. Scarlatti wrote this wonderful example of his middle period of music at the time when he was in the full possession of his musical faculties. You'll notice his use of the diminished 13th and his highly original use of the flugelhorn in the second section that comes immediately after bar 13 of the coda. The flugelhorn, by the way, is played by the chief flugelhornist of the Louisville Symphony Orchestra, Charles W. Dildock. And, you know, it was a very elegant kind of thing. Well, one night, George, we shall call him George for purposes of discussion, since that's what his name was, George was pacing around in the studio. And in this particular studio where he did his show, in collaboration with one of the most talented engineers I've ever known, the two of them were sitting around. And they have been rehearsing the show. They time the records and all that stuff. Very beautifully produced show. George is bored. And George was a party piano player. He's the kind of piano player, never took a lesson in his life, you know. The kind that learned by it when he was 10, learning chopsticks, and then he moved on to playing the Stars and Stripes Forever. Then he would play stuff like You Are My Sunshine with trills. And the pure party piano player. Had about 3 numbers he played. So George is sitting at the piano in this studio where he did this show. Had a beautiful Steinway. It was hardly ever used. You know, many radio stations have a magnificent piano around that's left over from the old days in the radio when on Sunday morning this lady would come in and sing selections from Percy Grainger, that kind of stuff. So, and most radio stations, they don't know what to do with it, so they just keep it around as an artifact. And we had this magnificent Steinway. And because it was on the books at how many thousands of dollars a Steinway grand goes for, they would have it tuned every couple of weeks. Guy would come in and he'd sit and tune it. And nobody ever used it. Well, George is sitting at the piano on this day. He's sitting down. All by himself in the studio. At least he thinks he's by himself. Now remember, it is a radio studio. So he's in the studio, it's quiet. And I was around the day this happened. And he's sitting in there, and he's playing with the piano. He's just, you know, sitting there. He's tired of reading, which he was reading all the time when he wasn't working. So George, who looked a little bit like, a little like Disraeli. He had long hair, long before long hair was popular. He was that kind of guy, see. So George is sitting there going, ding, 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 ding. And he stopped playing it. He's finished. He sort of stopped, and he swings around on the piano stool, and just then, out of the monitor speaker in the studio, a great big 15-inch Jensen monitor speaker in a huge cabinet, it starts to ring. Ding, 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 ding. George looks up. Now, I was privy to what, you know, what was going on. What happened was that Bob, in the next room, has just thrown the mic on, and he's recording George playing at the piano, and then he puts an echo chamber on it and feeds it back to George. Immediately after George stopped playing, he feeds it into the monitor, and George is sitting in there, you know, his eyeballs are popping, and out of this great big speaker comes this sound. Well, we're watching him, see? And so George kind of laughs, because, you know what, you know, you're used to being recorded when you're in a radio station, so George kind of laughs, and then he takes the piano and he starts to play just random notes on the piano. For example, he goes, dong, 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 dong. Well, Bob records this stuff and plays it back to George. Only this time he puts a real reverb on it. And this is the way it goes. Well, George is listening to this in there, and Bob is laughing. You know, they're just playing around. All they're doing is wasting time, actually. Just playing around a bit. And Bob says, hey, I got an idea. And so he throws the talk back open, and George is still sitting in the studio. He says, hey, George, how about playing about 8 or 9 random notes for me? He says, give a little beat and play about 8 or 9 or 10 random notes for me. And I got something I'm going to do here. So George says, you know, okay. And so he goes, dong, 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 dong. So Bob then feeds it back to George, and it was great. After he had made a change, Bob feeds it back to him. For crying out loud, it's great. What Bob had done was put a reverb on it and simply then reversed the tape. He fed it back into another machine and recorded it backward, which changed the whole sound. Well, then Bob is getting another idea. He says, look, George, play again. He says, I'll tell you what you do. Play another line over that, see? And he says, you just play it. Just anything at random. He said, but give kind of a beat like that. And he said, I'll record it, and then we'll see what I can do with it. So George takes his piano, and he goes, dong, 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 dong. Well, then Bob is working like mad. By now, he's got his tape splicer out. You know, he's on the whole thing. Well, to make a long story short, George and Bob that night put together an 8-minute piece of music that sounded a little bit like this. Yeah, that other one. That it's a little bit like this. Boom. 8 minutes. And that night, George went into his little office and he wrote out an introduction. And the introduction said something like this, and I'll have to wildly paraphrase it. He said just recently, a whole series of highly unusual recordings were discovered in Italy. These were the recordings that had been made during the latter days of World War II by a young Italian composer named Giuseppe Farinini. Giuseppe Farinini was a young composer who, just before World War II, had been doing some highly complex experiments that had not come to light until long after the war, when various researches were being done in the Italian Conservatory of Music's files, and they came upon these really rare recordings. Giuseppe Farinini was a young man who, not much is known about him, except that he was from the northern part of Italy, in the vicinity of Trieste. And young Farinini had studied under some of the more advanced musicologists of Italy, and particularly Switzerland, just before World War II began to close down the continent of Europe to the great sweeping art that was moving across the continent just before the war closed it all down. Giuseppe Farinini's work will be heard tonight in a recording which is actually a reproduction of one of the original recordings, which is now in the Museum of the Italian Conservatory of Music in Milan. We now hear the second piano sonata for associated electronic instruments and the various specially devised instruments that were created by Giuseppe Farinini himself. And now we begin to hear the second piano sonata and concerto. It was just thrown out. And of course, they were flipping. They were laughing, hitting each other, you know, when they played it. And nobody at the station took it seriously. Except that one thing did happen that night. There were about 50 phone calls from people who said it was the greatest, grooviest thing they ever heard. So George, you know, a real practical joker, is encouraged by success. I mean, I'll tell you, the worst thing you can do to a practical joker, if you hate practical jokers, is to laugh at his joke. I mean, he never stops. And so the next night, George, about 8 o'clock in the evening, he and Bob were working on the second concerto. And within about 20 minutes, by now, they knew what they were about to do. You see, they had worked out the technique. And in less than 20 minutes, they turned out a 10-minute concerto. That was unbelievable. So that night, George came on the air, and he said, due to an unprecedented number of requests from various listeners to the evening concerts program tonight, we're going to play another in the series of tapes by the Italian composer Giannini Farinino. These rather interesting tapes, in which incidentally have now been the subject of a maelstrom of controversy in musical circles in Europe, these tapes have been brought over as a special contribution to evening concerts. Never having been heard in the United States, you are listening to a U.S. premiere of the work of this superbly gifted young Italian. Farinino was born, according to all available records, in a small village outside of Milan. He was early influenced by the folk music of his area, the Italian tarantella, the various musics of the peasants who lived in the area of his birth. Shortly after he graduated from high school, the high school in this case being the Scolaetia Italiana Milano, he attended a university, which is no longer in existence. This university was a fine arts university, a very small scholarly group. It was there that he became interested in a new form of musical communication. He was also apparently a very gifted electronics engineer. At working under extreme difficulties under the fascist state, Giuseppe Farinino created a series of tapes which, due to the highly controversial nature of the work, was suppressed by the Mussolini government then in power. These tapes have just come to light, and tonight we hear the fourth tape. The third tape we are in the process of obtaining for your enjoyment, but the fourth tape is a short, more or less, sketch. It's difficult to put these into conventional musical terminology because Giuseppe Farinino himself was a man who fought all of his life against the semantics of the musical form of artistic expression. A short sketch showing the terrors of war, suppression of the artistic spirit under a fascist state. All these can be heard in this short piano electronic sketch by Giuseppe Farinino, an extremely gifted young Italian composer. Response was fantastic. And for over 3 weeks, George and Bob every night played another tape in the middle of this very serious program, and they'd whip them up between the sports show and the weather broadcast every night. I'm serious. They'd knock these babies together. And then it happened. At the end of the third week, they received a letter from one of the most prestigious Cincinnati musical organizations. Was a highly involved, well, it was like Juilliard. They received a letter from the head of it who said that he had been listening to these fantastic, magnificent examples of creativity, and that he wished to further his knowledge of this, and he wanted to come up and find out where they got these tapes. They wanted to go to Italy to bring this young man over to America, and it was a terrible thing. All of a sudden, he got this, and it was a fantastic moment. Well, George and Bob sat in the control room that night, and they flipped. They had this letter from the head of this organization, and by the way, he was about as prestigious as, let's say, the president of Juilliard. And the letter went on to say that he had heard rumors of this work. And that, incidentally, was one of the prime sources of disillusionment, because he said he had heard rumors of this work, and he was so delighted that the program was now bringing him this work and bringing all the people of the United States this work, which is so in advance of anything that had been done up to this day by American composers. And please, could he come up, and he would like to talk more about this, and if possible, they would like to bring the young man over under a special scholarship grant. Well, George, of course, flipped, and everybody's running around hitting each other, the guys from the newsroom and everything, you know, they're running around, they're carrying, because everybody in the station knew what was going on, except the sponsor. They didn't know that this is George. Well, then they decided that they were going to make their master stroke. And so that night, they put together another tape. So, you know, it takes about 9 minutes to put together an 8.5-minute tape. By now, they were very good at it. And so they put together this tape. And that evening, when George came on, everybody's sitting in the... All the boys in the radio station are listening on the monitors, because George had this beautiful deadpan delivery. He made, believe me, he made more Milton Cross sound a little bit like Red Skelton. Really deadpan. And he said, he came on,
after they played something like a Beethoven 7th, which was a, you know, usual symphony season tonight, to conclude evening concerts, we have a very interesting piece of music, and unfortunately the last piece of music that has come to light from the gifted Italian composer Giannini Farinino. This tape we are about to play tonight is the last in the series that we are privileged to present to you. That young Farinino, according to the latest information that we have obtained here, died shortly after World War II. Young Farinino, who has become almost a legend in his lifetime, created a small but highly succinct body of work. And there are many musicologists around the world who feel that he could quite conceivably be the most influential composer of the mid-20th century. His work is being studied in many musical centers, for example, the University of Musicology and Technique in Munich recently ran a series of analysis of his work and found that many of the electronic devices that he was using were of his own devising and completely unique to the musical world of our time. And so tonight, it is with some sadness, but yet with great pride, we present the last in the series of tapes by the late young Italian composer who died at the age of 21, Giannini Farinino, who died fighting a partisan cause in the last days of World War II. His last recorded example of the great creative work of Giannini Farinino. Casual listener, of course, can hear the sound of deep foreboding and the and the feeling, of course, that man in the 20th century is lost, alone, and alienated. Called by a musicologist in Europe the first poet of alienation, his work will probably be far more possibly prestigious, understood, and influential in the next century. And so we conclude our series of broadcasts of the short but highly provocative body of work by Giannini Farinino, a young Italian composer. Next week, our old Bach festival begins. Well, may I tell you that by the end of the cycle, which roughly lasted, maybe 8 to 10 to 15 days, because George and Bob were clever enough not to do it every night, the number of broadcasts that it covered was close to a month. And by the end of that month, there was a tremendous, tremendous number of letters that would arrive every week that this was broadcast. And incidentally, all of them asking if they could get recordings, if they could buy LPs. Was this ever going to be put on LP? And and in the meantime, of course, George and Bob are sitting there hitting each other all the time. And then the final kicker came from a very prestigious weekly international world-renowned news magazine. A reporter wrote a long letter saying that they had heard of the fantastic tapes that were being played on this radio station, and they would like to do a profile on Giannini Farinino, the undiscovered Italian poet of the alienation, the music of lost and gone 20th century man. Well, George and Bob sat down, and in 20 minutes or so, they knocked out a short thumbnail biography. Which they mailed off to the news magazine. And 6 weeks to the day, a beautifully written, tiny paragraph appeared in the music section of this famous magazine, saying one of the great losses to the 20th century musical world was the loss of young Giannini Farinino, an Italian composer who died fighting in the partisan cause just outside his native city of Milano under the evil thumb of the fascistic Mussolini. This goes to prove, again, of course, they said, that true art will always flourish under the most oppressive governments, that the man's spirit swings and springs eternal from the seed of adversity. Hail and farewell, Giannini Farinino. Hail and farewell. The world will never see again the likes of you. Well, that became a legend. And you know, I doubt whether many people outside of just that little circle, because not many people talked about it, outside of that little tiny circle of people, George, Bob, a few others, a couple of engineers at the station, myself, three or four announcers, knew the full extent of the success of this fantastic moment in man's attempt to create art under the adverse conditions of a fascistic regime. And so tonight, we would like to salute Giannini Farinino, wherever you might be. Hail and farewell.